This is the EWN Radio Network.
Been asking questions and I found all the answers inside. Been down this road before, so many open doors, but I'm still standing outside. Started with something, said it was coming, gave them my all, but they still left me nothing.
Hello and welcome to Empowering Motherhood Radio. I'm Tara Darlington and here to light your journey in motherhood. Now today we have Yoli Tamu and we're talking about all sorts of things. I think this conversation is going to go in quite a few different fascinating directions, from her music to her relationship with her mother to her relationship with herself and how that has taken Yoli down this path of working to help heal relationships between mothers and their daughters, which is very a passionate topic for me too. My eldest is a girl, she's 16, and we have a great relationship, but I have noticed how many of her friends and people that she meets, how they don't have a great relationship with their mothers. And I have been really observing what it takes. And as I like to say, often the conversation stopped a long time ago, well before they were teenagers. So welcome to the show, Yoli. I'm so happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Tara. I'm excited to be here too. This is a great topic.
It is a great topic. So it is. So let's just go back to what you were just telling me about, your relationship with your mum and how, you had a time in your life where you needed to reassess yourself and reconnect with yourself, and that you, as an adult, felt something was missing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Wow. Let me just first thank you for having me on, because I don't really talk about this stuff a lot unless I'm talking into my group, so this is great to do this. As far as my relationship with my mom, I knew at an early age that she was always someone that wanted to make sure that I did go after my dreams. So I am very happy that she did pay attention to me and paid attention to my gifts and my talents. And she, like many mothers, put me in front of a church choir and, discovered I could sing and that I could connect with people. And out of that, I discovered that I enjoyed doing it. So I commend her for that in helping me find my passion. However, as I got older, it became a relationship where there was an expectation for me to perform all the time. So I started to feel as if my dream had now become my mother's dream. And that was a big, big, big problem. And I don't even think my mother realized it until we got older, till opportunities start coming to me in my college years and even my high school years. And I just started to decide, if I didn't want to do a thing, my mom would be upset about it. So I would... she was more concerned about me taking on certain opportunities than I was. And I just started to see that my dream was now her dream. And it was very hard. It was an uphill battle from that point forward.
I guess it's a very fine line between, motivating your children and helping them to, reach their potential, so to speak, and letting them find it themselves. And that, I guess that's one big difference, is helping them to nurture that motivation and will to come from them rather than from you.
Yeah, because my mom, she was a gospel director, so she was already a dynamic personality and spoke very well in front of people. So I kind of feel as if she kind of stopped doing something she wanted to do, or she had some sort of fear and didn't go out and become this performer or presenter or whatever was within her, I don't think she completely fulfilled it, because she was an excellent pianist and sat behind that piano and could direct, you know, the greatest, grandest choirs. But I don't know, she always stood behind the scenes. So I kind of feel like she hasn't fulfilled her, or did not fulfill her dreams. And I think that's a big problem. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
For a lot of months.
So where did that take you? Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's, I mean, that's part of my whole motivation with this show of empowering motherhood. And I actually wrote an essay on it at uni many years ago about needing to step back and connect with yourself and you know, and look at what it is that you're doing, if you're doing it for yourself or to please others or as part of your duties, and you know, reassessing that in a way, I guess, and in that comes reframing womanhood and feminism, and you know, it goes in so many directions from there. But tell us now about your, so you were married, and but something you, and you sort of had it all in a lot of ways, but something felt missing for you.
Yeah, I was telling you that my passion for singing and performing has, you know, been throughout my whole life. You know, as my mom put me out there in front of that church at 14. So throughout high school, I was at a performing arts school. I went on to Howard University, a great college, majored in musical theater, and I was in all the major productions and traveled and all that good stuff. So I really started to hone my craft in the arts, and I was fortunate enough to leave college. I lived in Japan for 6 months. My parents put me on a plane, got me an agent, and said, you know, go overseas and see if you really want to do this thing. So, you know, that's how invested they were in me. And I lived over there and like I said, you know, stayed for 6 months and performed and all of that good stuff, and was able to get a major record deal. So I was thrown into the limelight very quickly at a young age, early 20s, fresh out of college, and a lot of opportunities, a lot of money was being thrown at me and my family. A lot of things were coming to me, and some of the stuff was coming too quickly, and there were too many sharks out there in the water. You know, they were swimming, and you know, I just didn't feel comfortable. I didn't feel like I could truly be myself. I was fortunate to meet some great people in the music business, and I was able to complete an album. And the album didn't get released, but one of my songs made it into a film many years ago. It was a film called Deliver Us from Eva. And I was excited about that because people know me from that film, Ain't No Stopping Sunshine, was the song. So that song just fulfilled me in such a major way. And just coming down off of the high of that, I was still interested in the music industry, but I was more interested in how I was becoming empowered as an individual, just as a person, how it was okay to stand up for who you were inside the music industry. And if I didn't fit, then it was time for me to step back. And I felt like it wasn't a good fit, particularly with the people that I was surrounding myself with. So I actually backed out of the business and decided to get married. And to me, I think I did a disservice to my ex-husband, because it's almost as if he filled a void for me. And I loved him, but then at the same time, my true love was not finished. I didn't fulfill my dream. I didn't fulfill this passion I had within me, because frankly, you know, annoyed and scared of the industry that I was in. So there, I should have taken another route. You know what I mean? I should have found another way to pursue this passion. And I thought for some reason the music business was the only way to do it. So I pulled out and found out years later that I left a big chunk of my heart on the floor, you know? And so I married someone, and we were great friends, but there was so much turmoil within the relationship that I just kept losing myself. I just kept slowly feeling myself just turning into this robotic wife, this dutiful daughter, this, you know, I was just somebody else. And
it's it just a big challenge for women now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. And so I just knew that inside of that marriage, I wasn't going to be a positive force for anyone, for me, for him, for anybody who was watching me as an example. And so I had decided after 7 years, 12-year relationship, but after 7 years that it was time for me to back away because I just didn't feel like I was completely in it. And I don't think he really felt there was a complete connection there. So, you know, I backed out of the marriage, and as a result, I sat and kind of, I don't know, I spent like a good couple years just by myself, just trying to figure out what am I going through, what am I missing, and somehow I just started writing, and music came back to me. Journaling, that's why I think journaling is so important for mothers. You know, get your thoughts out,
absolutely.
You know, whatever your past is, it needs to be written. And so as a result of that, you know, writing, I came into this new project, Back to Me, and Back to Me was really a self-discovery of myself, you know, fitting into all these boxes that moms can understand. You know, they fit into all these little boxes. My mother had a predestined plan for me, and I had an idea of what I was supposed to be, and society had an idea of what I was supposed to be, and it was like, who am I in all of that? And so I came up with this project, and it was a powerful project, and out of that, you know, as an educator, on top of all of this, being in the music business and being an educator, my high school kids, particularly my girls, but even my boys, surprisingly, a lot of boys would talk to me, especially as they got older. When they're 16, 17 years old, the boys are starting to talk a little bit. But the girls, they talk the whole time. You know, they always talk. But
So you're saying you were doing tutoring, but often it turned into counseling sessions.
Yeah, so as an educator, they started asking me so many questions, and it was so funny because I had already started writing music about myself, and the stories that I was putting out on paper were about getting out of these boxes and finding my own destiny and my dreams. So I started teaching that to my kids because academically, I would teach them one-on-one, and we would get through the academics, and we would always have time to talk. And after the academics, they wanted to talk about, you know, well, I can't talk to my mother about XYZ, or how is it you're so easy to talk to, and why is it that you're just open to me? You know, you don't judge me.
I think there's two things there. Just one sec. There's two things there. One said you always had time to talk. That's got to be one problem, that people don't have the time to talk. And then the other thing that you said is, you know, that you're easy to talk to, so therefore you're listening.
Absolutely. Yeah, no matter what comes at me, no matter what they're getting ready to say, I just take the position as this is a human being going through a human experience, period. So I may have a certain opinion about it, but I think that young people are some of the sharpest, wisest people alive, especially teenagers, because they're coming to a place where they're getting in touch with what's going on with them. There's so many hormones and there's so many things happening, and they're ready to express themselves with no filter. You know, and as a parent, it may be coming at you hard, and it may hit you in a way that you don't appreciate, and sometimes it comes off very disrespectful. But what I do is I sit back, and I'm always in a state of calm, even if I feel offended. And I mean, sometimes they may say things to me that I think are disrespectful, or I think are, you know, a little too much. Like, I don't know, for example, I had a teen girl who was just not getting along with her mother, and she said something very derogatory about her mom. And I said, you know what, that's totally disrespectful. I said, that's unnecessary, no matter what you're feeling or what you're going through, you shouldn't have to say those types of things about your mother because she is sacrificing for you. And within a couple of years, you'll be an adult. You'll be 18. So she can make a choice and tell you to move on. You know? So for you to think that it's okay is not a cool thing. And so then we kind of went back and forth, and she was kind of yelling and raising her voice. And I would just let her do it. And I didn't feel like, oh, my gosh, she's disrespecting me. She's yelling at me. She's raising her voice. I just looked at her as a person that was going through something, and I just wanted her to get it out of herself, just get it out. I didn't take it personally.
I did speak there's a psychologist in our area who specializes in teenagers, and she actually did a survey of the teenagers to ask them what makes a cool adult, and it was unanimously non-reactive. Not reacting you know, to everything that they say, which is exactly what you're talking about, just staying calm and almost being a soundboard for them.
Yes, they can't believe it. They're in a state of shock because you're giving them an opportunity. You're giving them space to just be, whether it's wrong or right, you're giving them the space. So then it's like, okay, when it's time, when there's a pause, then there's a time for me to jump in and say, okay, I hear what you're saying. I don't think you need to speak to me that way. I really don't think it's necessary to raise your tone. We can get a lot accomplished. You calm down and listen. And there's something about the calmness that has to happen within the adult. Like, I go through these breathing exercises. I do a lot of meditating. There's a place in my body that I always want to feel, and I don't want anybody to interrupt that feeling. No one. And that's what I encourage mothers to, that's where self-care comes in, where moms have to really start taking care of themselves so that they can sit in the middle of a storm and be calm. It is possible. It is possible. It is very possible.
Well, that's where learning meditation, practicing meditation, writing your journaling, you know, center, knowing how to center yourself and actually having that connection within yourself so you can sit in it, that calmness and, that, like you said, that place where no one's going to interrupt that peace and ease in the, your deep center. But that's, you know, you need to practice that as a mother outside of the family a little bit, don't you? Like you said, you do your meditation and things like that.
Yeah, I encourage moms to do things like that, you know, to set some sort of routine for themselves. You know, I tell my kids, I said, you know, it's a routine for you to get up, brush your teeth, bathe your body, eat a little something, you're out the door. But where's the mental, where's the spiritual routine? We always forget about that. You know, we always think about the physical, but where's the mental and the spiritual routine? So I encourage them to take the 15, 20 minutes. And I know you talk about this as well in some of your programs that, you know, there is a routine that people can learn to do. And it is vital because you can walk into any situation. And if you're in tune with your calmness, your energy, yourself, you can be in any situation. Really, you can. And then you can also remove yourself. You can know when it's time to remove yourself because it's becoming too much. Just like as a mom can know when she can know when to end the conversation. She can know when to cut the conversation short and simply say, you know what, this is going to a place that's unnecessary. So we're going to stop here. I'm not feeling like this is a good time to talk right now. And clearly you're very upset, and I'm very upset. So we're just going to stop right here. And what I encourage moms to do is make some sort of appointment to come back to that conversation. Because if you leave a girl hanging, then that's when she's like, okay, well, let me just go find somebody else. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go and have a shower, and then we'll have something to eat, and we'll talk after that, something like that.
Right, we'll come back to it, but we definitely will come back to this. They have to know that because there's security in mom being solid like that. There's security in her being confident in that calmness. Because the team, she'll rant and rave, but she'll see this peace within that you have and this maturity of calmness that you carry. Where you're letting her know this is an important conversation, but I respect myself enough to know that I need to remove myself from this situation. That is modeling to a teen girl immediately.
Exactly. So then they're seeing, that's right. So you're teaching them in that moment when they get into a rage or when they're getting a bit out of control, their emotions are flying everywhere and they're completely can't control themselves in one way or another to remove themselves, take some time. You're modeling that to them, and that's how we all learn. We learn from imitating what's around us.
Absolutely. You just model. And it's so funny because with me as an educator, sometimes I laugh it off. Sometimes I say, are you okay? Are you ready to talk now? You get that out. I just blow it off. Like, what? Why are you laughing? And I said, because you said a whole lot. Now let's get to what you're really feeling. That's what I'll do. And it just blows them away. And then what I do is I bring in my real feelings. You know, I tell them exactly how that made me feel in that instance. You know, like I really felt that was very disrespectful, but I understand that you're completely emotional right now and you're hormonal. You know, these 10 years you're experiencing things, your body is growing and your emotions are going everywhere. I get it, but I still need to address the fact that we don't need to talk to each other this way. So this is what I would like to say to you. And then you lay out your case or lay out your point, whatever that argument is, and it becomes a mature conversation. And they start to feel mature. They start to feel like, wow, she's talking to me like equal almost.
Mm.
I hate to say equal, yep. Moms hate that. But it's an equal on the level of communication. Yeah.
Well, it's an equal respect, basically. I have a lot of people, when I teach, you know, the new mums, and I ask them, what do you want your child to walk out the door with at 14 or 18 or 21? And something that always comes up is respect. And,
yes.
You know, it's not a, you need to model respect. So by showing them respect, then you show how to show someone respect, what that actually looks like, what it feels like. And so then what you're talking about there is a mutual respect. I'll show you respect and listen. Now you're going to show me the respect and listen. You know, that type
right.
of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I'm telling you,
right,
I
we're
had
gonna
a
have
young
a quick,
girl. Oh, go ahead.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, you go. Tell this story, then we'll have a quick break.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I had a young girl, a 14-year-old, came to my group, and she just had a horrible relationship with her mom, and I took them through this program, this teen program I put together. It was a 6-week mentoring after-school program. And by the end of that, she had learned how to talk to her mother, and she had learned how to just talk in a way that that valued. She felt valued in the way that she expressed how she truly felt. And her mom came back to me and said, I don't know, it's something about my daughter that she's calm in the way that she speaks to me, but I'm still upset at what she's saying. There's a calmness. So I do know it works.
Mm.
That's really what I wanted to say. That calmness is very effective.
Mm. Yeah. We're going to have a little quick break, and I want to talk about authenticity and also more about your programs and how that works with people. So we'll be just take a little quick break.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
We're here today with Yoli Tamu, and we're talking about, I told you this conversation was going to go in all different directions, which it needs to, about teenagers, a relation, mother-daughter relationship in particular, and something that you touched on before, which I want to just explore a little bit more before we move on, is authenticity. So you touched on how, you know, you need to express yourself. They can read you like a book, just like you can sort of read them like a book.
Right.
So, and with that modeling, then we need to be authentic in what we're saying, in how we're feeling. And when you do get that moment of calmness, you can say to them, this is how you made me feel, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's okay to say that. I feel like sometimes moms feel like they have to be this this super woman, you know, that that really has to protect their kid and can't really show weakness and vulnerability. You have to. Period. Mm. That's what makes you human. That's what makes you human is when you show your vulnerability. And there's no weakness in it when you support it by saying, I'm feeling this and I'd appreciate it if you do that. That's different than I'm feeling
this.
That's right. So stop it, you know?
Mm. But you're also asking them in that moment for them to be authentic. You're asking them to tell you what's really going on for them, what, you know, how are they feeling, what's underneath all of this, what's happened, you know, has your boyfriend broken up with you, have someone said something to you, is everything just getting too much? So in that moment when you're actually wanting them to be authentic, to you about themselves and show their vulnerability. So if we're not modeling that to them in that conversation or in other times, then, you know, how can we expect them to drop that guard? Otherwise, we're teaching them to hold that guard up all the time.
Ah, that is excellent. You're right. You're right. That's it. It has to be a habitual communication process in the household. They have to be used to hearing you express yourself, like you said. They have to get used to that, so then they will just willingly come to you with everything. They'll come to you with everything. Because they want to know, and they know that their friends don't know.
That's right.
So they will come. So that's great what you said. That's exactly it. They have to show this on a consistent basis.
And that comes down to, you know, what are the main things that people can do? And I know the one on the tip of my tongue, and anyone who's been listening regularly to these podcasts knows that it comes up every time, which is having dinner together, having meals together, creating time to talk, time to listen, and to keep that conversation going. So what are your other tips for fostering this relationship?
For keeping this relationship, I definitely recommend some sort of ritual. I think dinner is definitely a ritual.
Yeah.
I think that there needs to be some sort of getaway of some kind, particularly since I work with mothers and teen girls. A girl's getaway is important. It could be a monthly thing, an annual thing. It could be a daily thing. It could be a checkup that you always do. There's some sort of daily checkup with each other that you do, or there could be a wrap-up at the end of the evening that you do. But I encourage some sort of consistent ritual. What I like to do with my mom is we always have spa days. You know, it would always be, you know, either once a month or quarterly, we get our spa day in, and it's me and her, you know, and she's in her most relaxed state in the spa.
Yeah, right. You've picked that one carefully. You've carefully chosen that.
Yes. But that, you know, for some that may be an expensive ritual, but, you know, that's just something that I like to do. But the whole point is that we have this time together. So it may be, you know, we can go to dinner. We can movies kind of get in the way because you can't talk. But to go to dinner, things like that. And if, for those that don't want to spend money within the household, I encourage games. I think games are fun activities to do, and they should become a family ritual. You know, if it's every weekend we do this, you know, family night in particular, or once a month we do something. But the family needs to set a specific quality ritual, and having dinner at the table can be that daily ritual. But what is that consistent weekly or monthly thing that everyone does as a family that keeps them united? That's what I think. So, you know, like I said, games in the house or leaving the house, and it could be as expensive as a spa day. But small stuff, going out and getting manicures and pedicures together, that stuff is important, and they enjoy that stuff.
Yeah. I've got kids from 3 to 16, and in between. I've got two boys. They're 10 and 11. So often what we'll actually do, because my eldest daughter also plays, we have AFL in Australia, Australian football. Aussie rules, we call it. She plays Aussie rules, and some of the boys do too. So, but all the kids love kicking a ball. So often we'll, on the weekends, at least every other weekend probably, you know, all of us will go down to the park and be kicking a ball around. And there's lots of laughs and conversations that happens with that. So that's definitely something that we do.
Yeah, that's fun stuff, especially getting out of the house. I love getting out of the house and doing other things. That's fun stuff. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
And it could be hiking. I mean, there's so many things that can create intimacy. You know, hiking trips. We can roll down a list, but those are just a few that are coming off the top of my head of opportunities to be together. There's no interruption. I think movie night, you know, there's no opportunity to talk because we're all looking at the screen. But like
yeah,
you said, things like that, getting outside, getting together somehow.
Yeah, that's right, and doing it purposefully. And so, yeah, creating a ritual out of it so that everyone – and that actually – I did a whole show on we covered a lot about rituals in families and for children and how important they are from an early age and how much security they create for children and for all of us. And when times are tough, they really hang on to those. So the earlier we can create those, the better. But, you know, if you haven't done that already, and, you know, that's probably one of the places that you need to start. So if things are really bad between a mother and daughter, what's your first, you know, what's the first step that they should take?
Yeah, if they're horrible, I mean, what do you mean? They just are not talking at all? What would be considered
Yeah,
horrible?
Not talking, or when they do talk, it's sort of, you know, swearing and, you know, just a broken down relationship, I guess.
It's really distant. Well, what I have encouraged moms to do is to definitely invest in her village, because I think every mom should have a village around her. So supportive mothers, you know, other moms with friends. Those are very, because even the teachers know that the daughter, particularly, or even just any child, boy or girl, but the teachers are very important. I know that the kids come to me when they feel like they're not talking at all to their mom. And I would, as a mom, kind of take a look at the teachers that my child is surrounded by and get a feel for who my child is gravitating towards. And it could be like an after-school brief conversation where it's a brief checkup. You know, there's a way that a teacher can do something very calmly, very nonchalant. How are you doing? What are you up to? How are things going? And be that person that's open, but mom has a communication with that teacher. There is some sort of established communication. That works a lot, you know, where you do have to just go outside of yourself briefly for a time. And so then when that daughter, you know, and it takes time. This isn't an overnight process, but it takes time where there's some trust that is built between this teacher or even some sort of coach of some kind, where trust is developed between you and that person, the parent and that person, where mom eventually will find a way in because there has been a softening that has taken place because this person, this young person feels like, oh, you know, I have somebody to go to vent to, so I don't necessarily have to, I'm not as pent up. Things aren't as pent up because I've been releasing it with someone else. So I think the young person will calm down. It'll be a process, and parents have to be patient to go through the process. So at some point when there's a softening, you watch your child. You'll see the softening that takes place. And when that softening happens, casually bring up things. It could be a small gift. It could be a small outing, like, oh, no, I know you love such and such, and I got some tickets. Give me some tickets. You want to go? I mean, you know, it's just so casual. That's a slow way to make your way into it, because it doesn't seem like you're trying too hard. And you were paying attention. You were very observant throughout this waiting period that you had to wait. Let her go through her process. You waited out, and you came in with some sort of proposal. You have to make the person. She's not going to do it.
That's right. And it's well known that there's a lot of research into this, that it's the mentor period, you know, 14 to 21. They really are looking for a mentor because they want to start stepping. Comes back to what you were talking about at the beginning about yourself. It's a time for them to discover who they are separate from their parents, and they start looking for a mentor. So, you know, I say to people, you need to start putting healthy mentors in their way, which is exactly what you're talking about. You know, they like that music teacher, bit more music or whatever it is. Or sometimes I call it backdoor parenting. You know, I know that my daughter has some of her friends' mums that she loves to talk to. So if I'm wondering what's going on about something, I might say to her, oh, can you sort of find out about this? And I won't let her know that I've done that, but then I can have a bit more insight to, you know, like you said, very casually say, oh, you know, you feel like you haven't had, you know, let's do this or whatever, you know, whatever's going on to help nurture the situation, I guess. So there is that definite 14 to 21 of, you know, needing a mentor. And I think as parents, it's up to us to put the right people in the way of them. Otherwise, they can gravitate to using their friends as this mentorship, but none of them have the wisdom, and they're all going through the same thing. So finding that mentor and creating, nurturing that other relationship in a way where, you know, they don't feel like you're pushing them into it, but they feel like it's, you know, that it's more a natural thing for them gravitating towards somebody.
Right. And the main thing is mom needs to know that it's normal. What this girl is experiencing or this boy is experiencing is normal. You know, they say the teen years are the crazy years or whatever. I don't consider them the crazy years. Like I said, I think this is the best age because this is where there's no filter. They're just, whatever they're feeling is coming out of their mouth. You know what I mean? And I just feel if mom can just remember that it's normal and to wait this thing out, you're going to have to wait it out. There's no appointed time that she's going to do what I say regardless, you know? Now, I mean, of course, there's certain things that must be done, but at the same time, this whole detachment that mom might be feeling, it's temporary. So wait it out. And like you said, invest in these mentors because they're going to feed you the information. And that's what I did. You know, the moms came to me. I did have a confidentiality within my group, and I did make the girls feel secure. Like, you know, what you tell me, I'm not going to run and tell your parents unless, you know, it's something extreme, like you're talking about hurting yourself. Then I will have to get a third party involved. But pretty much whatever you have to say will stay in this room. And that's why they were able to talk to me. The great thing was that mom kind of already knew something was going on. She had an idea. And so she would kind of ask questions that were indirectly related to something that may have come up in the circle. Like, for in particular, to be really blunt with you, there was a young girl who was bisexual, and she didn't want to tell her mom. Her mom didn't even know she was having sex, period. So the fact that she was experimenting with a girl and a boy, she was devastated that this is the one thing she couldn't talk to her mother about. So her mom, in a roundabout way, said to me she knew there was something going on relating to her daughter and some boys at the school or some friends at the school, and if I could find out some information, you know, that was our conversation. So in a roundabout way, all I was able to tell mom was that, she's going to have a conversation with you very soon, but you have to wait. And if you can promise me, mom, that you can wait this thing out, she's coming to you. That's just what I told her. And lo and behold, it took her 6 weeks, but she did it. She went and told her mom everything.
Yeah, right. Because her mum waited, her mum would have dropped a lot of the anxiety around it, and that would have been the moment when her daughter probably chose to talk to her as well.
Yeah. So that was a powerful thing for her mother's experience.
Yeah, that was really powerful. And that brings me around to the sort of rites of passage. So, you know, a rite of we're missing that a lot in our society now, which is something I'm really passionate about. And my kids have, you know, at their school, they do a lot of this where at 14, in a lot of cultures, the children were taken away from the mother and then re-presented back, you know, as a, you know, not an adult, but re-presented back as a 14-year-old that is now taken away from mum. So there's a letting go for the mums as well, isn't there? Letting go of their little baby and allowing them to grow up. And I think we really need to start looking more at these rites of passage where, so my kids at 14, they go away for 3 to 4 weeks. They go overseas with school and they do all these amazing things. China went to New Zealand and walked on glaciers and stayed at a Maori high school and, you know, watch the guys get their traditional tattoos and all sorts of things. And then they came back to us and they were grown up and, you know, there's a letting go for us as well. So, you know, rites of passage is something we really need to pay more attention to. And that process that you're talking about, I'm hearing a lot of that, of the mothers having to let go and let the children represent themselves as a bit more grown up and a bit more their own person.
Yeah, because the bottom line is moms need to understand you're raising young people to be adults, period.
That's
your job. Your job is to create an adult. And so in doing so, there's a certain amount of independence that needs to exist. And the best way for you know, mom to do that is to allow this space, allow a sense of calmness. It's not that you're accepting everything your child is doing, but you're allowing space for growth. And, of course, you're going to step in if there's danger, you know what I mean? As a parent, you can decide and figure out what is dangerous. But for the most part, their practice, yeah, should be a sense of I'm creating an adult. I am creating an adult. I have to give this person as much independence in this particular instance as possible. How can I do it in a way that is protective of that person and gives them the space that they need to grow? That's mom's job. That's what the parent has to figure out.
Yeah, that's right. That's beautiful, beautifully put. Oh, I love it. So tell us about your programs that you run, because a lot of them are online. So no matter where people are listening, they can connect in with you. So tell us about the work that you do.
Oh, great. Well, thanks for asking. They can actually go to yolitamu.com, which is YOLITAM, as in Mary, U.com, yolitamu. And they can look for the tab Work with Yoli. And there's a group program that I've been starting recently, and I'll go into my next group in August, or I'll start my next group in August. It's for a selected group of moms. It's a four-week program, a bonding program for just moms. And a group of 25 moms, we all get together on these weekly calls, and we go everything we've been talking about. We go through the whole self-affirming process, because I want moms to reconnect to who they were as daughters, who their mother was. And what emotional patterns did they pick up from their moms? And how are they affirming themselves today? And what negative patterns are they transferring down to their daughter? And so it's like the first couple of weeks we spend a lot of time in doing that, rediscovering their dreams, their passions, and then we get into the real topics that their daughters want to talk about. So it's like I lay the platform for them to be ready and open to be transparent, because they did all this work on themselves. So now they're open to the conversation, you know, that the daughter is getting ready to have with them. And so in that four-week period, they just get a lot of information from other moms, and they compare notes on patterns and things that they want to change about themselves, and compare notes with their kids, and they talk about what works for their kid and what doesn't. And that's my goal at the end of 4 weeks, that they have created a community that we can stick together and continue to grow. But it's a four-week period, so that's what I'm offering right now.
Yep. Yeah, because that's about awareness, isn't it? I love the name Heart Conversation. Yeah, I love it. So that's about, you know, gaining awareness about yourself. So, a lot of the time we are reacting from our history and our own traumas and hurt and subconsciously passing on to our children or around us exactly that which we did not want to, but because we haven't done that work to become more aware, becomes a bit of a subconscious thing, doesn't it? And how do you get the not talking to the mother-daughter involved? That's what I want to know.
Not talking to the daughter? The mother's not talking, what you mean, to the daughter? Or vice versa?
Well, just if do the girls actually become involved in the program with you?
Oh, yeah. Eventually, if moms, after they get through this 4 weeks and they want to continue on, yes, we'll have a one-day event, which will be actually, I think I'm making a two-day event. It's a weekend retreat that I want to put together, and that's where the moms and daughters come together. So it'll be, you know, one session for daughters alone with me, one session for mothers alone with me, and then when by the end of the session, we'll come together, and I'll have some facilitators to support other topics that they want to discuss, cyberbullying, sex, teen dating, all these different things. I bring people in to talk about this. And by the end of this experience, the mothers and daughters come together. So I do like them separated initially, so that by the end, they come together and they understand in this circle of transparency is really what it comes down to at the end. But a lot of this self-care has to be done first, I believe, before the group circle can come together between mom and daughter.
Yeah. And the four-week program with the mothers, does that help give them the tools to invite their daughter on this retreat?
Yeah, that is the goal. The goal at the end is for mom to have come up with her specific rituals, her activities that she thinks that her and her daughter will enjoy. And then you start slowly incorporating some of this into her relationship with her daughter. So then her daughter will be open. She's used to hanging out with mom. She's open to hanging out with mom. You know, it's a process. It's a slow process. And I think that once the daughter is open to it, because I don't want a girl to come that's just doesn't want to be there. You know, she's just over it. I don't want her to come, because that means the work hasn't been done. You know, there isn't a mutual interest at all. And if the daughter would like to speak to me alone, I'm definitely available to do that, because I do speak to teens by themselves as well. As you know, I mentor. So I do that. But I'm so passionate about this mother-daughter connection that I want mom to do a lot of this work, because these kids only see me once. They still got to go back home to mom. They still got to go back home to this person. So why can't I take this time, teach mom everything I know, everything that has worked for me to keep myself calm so that I can communicate properly and be non-judgmental and still be firm, because I am an educator and I'm firm all day long, still be firm, but still be that person that they could want to come and talk to. So that's what I would suggest. I would suggest mom do the work. And in the program, I talk about, of course, journaling is important. And I ask moms to be as transparent as they can in those journals, because I want that to be a gift to their daughter when she becomes an adult. Maybe she's 21 or maybe she's a mother. I want her to be able to give her journal to that daughter then. So I think there's major power in that. So that's it. I'm really focused on mom right now, and the retreat will bring the daughter together. Maybe, I'd say realistically, maybe 3 months down the line, we could bring the daughter into the equation.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think that's the key, is that it's going to take time. And I like when you were talking earlier about the softening. So, you know, there's got to be that softening, which really is, you know, the mother observing themselves in a way, observing the situation, and the daughter having someone to talk to start letting it out, someone who's non-reactive, who's just going, you know, a soundboard, who's going to be strong but compassionate. And then, you know, and then that's the healing is in taking it slowly, isn't it?
Yeah, and this 4-week program I found is good, because moms need to feel appreciated. You know what I mean? It's like to sit there and be calm is easy to say for some who practiced it. But for a new person coming into this, it's like, excuse me, be calm. I have to raise these kids. I have to cook the dinner. I have to go to work. I have so many things on my plate. I just want what I want now. Do it. You're the kid. Do it. You know what I mean? And respect me, and that should be the end of it. So it's like when you're in the midst of a lot of chaos and multitasking, it's very hard to do this stuff. That's why we really have to decide, okay, I really have to retrain my body, really retrain my mind to take care of myself so that I can sit in this waiting stage that we're talking about, in this calming process, so that I'm able to go through it. And I think this 4-week program kind of helps moms reaffirm each other. So it's like I really think that moms lash out because they have nobody to talk to. You know what I mean? They feel like victims almost in their own household. Like, who do I go to? Where's my relief?
That's right.
You know, it's like I'm doing everything I can to raise this family.
Yeah, which comes back to it takes a village to raise a child, and we're not supposed to do it on our own. We can't do it on our own. We need to find, you know, people who are going to share our vision, people who are going to teach us and we're going to learn from. So we create a village of a really healthy adults surrounding ourselves, our family, and our children. And, you know, we work together to bring these children up to be happy, healthy, connected to themselves, and live, you know, their true life.
Right. And then this process will soften us because we need the softening as well as adults, as moms. We need the softening, you know? So that's why it's even more valuable that we do all of this. We're talking about how to break through to this daughter. Wait, how do we break through to mom? Because she's hardened herself too after a certain amount of experiences. She's become hard. So the village, like you said, is going to help soften us as adult women as well.
Convince me that what I dream is wrong. No matter what you say, you can't cloud my head. I push the fear away. You remember what I said. You can't stop the tide rising high. You can't stop. You say I've lost my chance. I'll be the one who couldn't walk to learn to dance. You stay my world times. One more revolution. Bring on the dawn. Gotta light one more solution. Now you can't stop what I'm all about. No. You can't hide for long in your doubt. No. Raise your shades up.
You can't stop it, my sunshine.